At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another podcast. Yes, we return with Knowing Wheel. I think we're on episode 85 85 episodes of Knowing Wheel. We're almost at the two-year landmark of the inauguration of the world's best Formula One podcast, as voted by...
According to who?
Well, that I hadn't actually stumbled that far into the show yet to work out who I was going to say. But you know what? We're going to self-crown ourselves with this one. Of course, as always, before we jump into the show this week, if you're watching this on YouTube, wave to the camera, Jamie, and you do want to check us out on Spotify, there will be links down below. You know, massive thank you to all of you that have continued to support us on Spotify this year. You know, the sport has been absolutely mind-blowing. You know, the fact that we sit here and ramble about Formula One for a few hours a week, and you know, so many of you tune in and leave us comments and even hurl abuse at me on Twitter about Fernando Alonso, it's all greatly greatly appreciated. But as well, of course, there will be links to F1 merch, to Bybit, to Manscaped, all that good stuff will be linked down below as well. So, you know, if you want to go check out a few different things, then we would highly, highly recommend doing so. But safe to say, we've got a lot to get through this week. Brazil, yes. As always, has delivered. And, of course, I think we'd all kind of forgot about it. It was a sprint weekend as well. So there was always going to be pretty much 100 laps worth of action from Brazil.
Yeah, yeah. And, yeah, that means that it's going to be an extra long podcast for you, I'd imagine. We don't know for sure, but knowing us, it will be extremely long.
Yes.
So shall we get straight into it with some
Well, we'll quickly qualifying. Plug the fact there's timestamps linked down below if you just want to go to a certain point of the show, because I think we both know already there's going to be a couple of spicy points of contention as we get through this evening. But yeah, let's start with qualifying then. It's safe to say the weekend started as it was going to go on, with chaos and unpredictability.
Yes, and being Brazil, it obviously meant there was going to be some changeable conditions, as there always seems to be some element of surprise in Interlagos. It's a very good race track to go to for that reason, really, and just the nature of it's really, yeah, it sets up good racing, which is exactly what you want, really, especially after Mexico last week, or last time out. Yeah, so qualifying started in the damp conditions. It was raining, but drying up fairly quickly. Obviously, 18-minute session, so there was going to be a chance at the end for one or two, maybe, laps each on the slick tyres. I think Gasly was the first to risk it on slicks. But yeah, Q1, yeah, there was chance for one lap each, really, on the dry tyre at the end of the session. And surprisingly, probably the most surprising thing about this session is there weren't any massive surprises, which is not a sentence I expected to be saying. But
yeah.
Mick Schumacher was last, I guess, in the context of the whole qualifying session. That was quite surprising.
Foreshadowing, Jamie.
Yeah, foreshadowing. Sorry. spoilers if you haven't watched the F1. I don't know how you ended up on this podcast, but welcome. Yes, Tsunoda, Bottas, Zhou and Latifi out. Imagine being employed by Alfa Romeo and going out both out in Q1.
Hey, they did all right by the end of the weekend.
Yeah, they did, to be fair. Well done, Alfa. Yes, Q2, again, was dry at the start and then just got a little damp towards the end of the session. Not wet enough for inters, but wet enough so no one really improved, which meant the session was kind of done, maybe 10 minutes in. And yeah, again, there weren't really any surprises of the drivers who went out. It's Albon, P11, Gasly, Vettel, Ricciardo and Stroll in 12th to 15th. And yeah, we kind of had that classic top nine plus one, which was Kevin Magnussen, which everyone expected to be P10, but it ended up Q3. But yeah, do you want to take us through Q3? I actually wasn't watching live, so yeah, you can run us down that.
I mean, it was just the perfect storm. It was one of those sessions. These sessions are, on the one hand, magical. On the other hand, of course, really frustrating. Because it was basically one run and you're done at the start of qualifying. There was rain inbound. Everyone knew it was just going to have to be the first car on a lap. Unless, of course, your Ferrari. Because as everyone comes out of the pit lane on a set of dry compound tyres, Charles Leclerc rocks up on intermediates. And there's a brilliant shot, Jamie, I don't know if you've seen
Twitter,
I did
see it.
Of Charles Leclerc in his helmet. You see his eyes looking in his rearview mirrors as he just, all sense of hope of Ferrari just absolutely falls apart. But because, of course, it's one run counts, you want to be starting right at the far end of the pit lane, you know, towards turn one. Mm. And now, of course, for those of you that aren't aware, the pit lane order is completely decided by last year's championship, Constructors' Championship finish. So that meant Kevin Magnussen, because of Nikita Mazepin being so bad last year, and of course, well, Haas generally having a bit of a dull, slow car anyway, Kevin Magnussen was the first car onto a lap, and it was absolutely one of those sessions where your first car on a run is going to have the best track, so should take pole. And despite the fact he's got a much slower car than the Red Bulls that were behind him, Kevin Magnussen did it in what was, I don't know if you've watched this lap back, Jamie, it's not certainly a world-breaking lap or anything like that, but it was just tidy. It was, honestly, it sort of gave me George Russell vibes from last year at Spa. There was nothing incredible about it, but the fact there was nothing incredible about it, but nothing wrong with it, kind of made it incredible. And that meant Kevin Magnussen, at the end of the first runs, was fastest by about 0.3 seconds. And, of course, no one was going to be able to touch it.
No. And it's kind of like, I remember they used to say on Top Gear with the star and reason for his car, they used to say, if a lap looks slow, it's probably really quick. If it doesn't look dramatic, you're probably carrying a lot of speed, which Kevin Magnussen certainly was. And yeah, I think Leclerc was at the head of the pit lane because he was on the inters looking back, wasn't he?
Leclerc was just behind Kevin Magnussen.
Oh, just behind, fair enough. So he did have the best of the conditions, but fair play. You made the most of it, for sure.
Richard.
Yes, Richard. So it's been a while. And I think Verstappen made a mistake in turn 8. I think he went wide there. So that kind of scuppered his potential, but he still put it second place, with George Russell ending up third. I mean, it wouldn't have mattered, but Russell then careered straight into the gravel. Because it was very odd that, because it was just a complete, driver error. He just put it on the grass on the entry.
Well, the rear's locked, and that's what pushed the rear outside tyre onto the grass, because the problem was, it looked to me like he dipped a wheel on the paint, which, of course, in the dry is absolutely fine. In the wet, it's risky. That then caused a bit of rear locking, I think, which obviously pushed that rear tyre out to the grass. And obviously, that's then when he went for quite an aggressive trip, actually, through the gravel trap. It looked like they absolutely cultivated that gravel trap. It was not smooth by any means.
No.
And then the most embarrassing thing about it, of course, was the fact that then George looped it around again and then got beached.
He actually did quite well to keep the car going and out the wall. And then as soon as he tried to actually get going, he just dug himself a hole and ended up beaching the gravel.
Literally dug himself a hole.
Yes. So that was the session definitely done. If there was any chance of improvement, by the time the red flag was gone, there was definitely not any chance of improvement. Which, left, 8 minutes or so of waiting for the session to end, Kevin Magnussen to take his first pole position.
I mean, Haas were kind of already vibing before the session had come to an end, but it was kind of one of those weird things where, I mean, Formula One even tweeted it before the session had ended. Kevin Magnussen, fair play. I mean, let's be fair, it was the perfect storm. It was just one of those things that it won't happen in Formula One often, but it makes a good story. It's a bit feel good for Haas as well. You know, they deserved it. It kind of, you know, after everything that's gone on for them over the last few years, you know, even back to 2019 with Rich Energy, they needed a win, and fair play. I had a big grin on my face watching K-Mag and the whole team celebrate.
Yeah, definitely. It's just Nothing on the 2010 poll, though. So
it was even better than the 2010 poll. Even better. But yeah, obviously we saw Kevin Magnussen then on pole position ahead of Max Verstappen, George Russell P3, Lando Norris, after food poisoning on Thursday, came back fastest in Q1, fastest in Q2, P4 at the end, of Q3. He was rapid all weekend long,
yeah.
Once again. And then, yeah, Sainz, Ocon, Alonso, Hamilton made a couple of small errors and just lacked confidence throughout the entirety of qualifying there, but still beat out Perez, who got stuck behind Leclerc. And of course, yeah, then Leclerc didn't even set a lap time anyway, so he just decided to screw his main championship rival.
Yeah, fair play. I would do the same, to be fair. Yeah, and then that was obviously set the grid for the sprint race, which took place on Saturday evening, which I was actually busy doing some real-life racing at that point, so I didn't watch the sprint race either.
Let's just specify that was go-karting.
Go-karting. I'm not a racing driver.
No.
I did win, though. So
you did? I was actually very... like, I saw that on Twitter. I was very impressed, to be fair.
Well, thank you. You'd get absolutely, like, done at go-karting.
Why?
Because I'd absolutely trounce you.
No, you wouldn't.
I definitely would.
I don't genuinely believe you would be quicker than me. Right, that's it. We're going go-karting. New year.
Winter social.
We're setting this up. We're doing knowing wheel goes go-karting.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
I do not believe you would be faster than me.
I would.
I don't believe that for one second. But anyway, let's talk about a sprint race that happened down in Brazil. Before we even got into the race, strange things were going on. Max Verstappen and Nicholas Latifi, if I remember correctly, were the only two cars not starting on softs, which was very unlike Red Bull. You'd expect Ferrari to have rocked up with full wets on both cars on a dry track, but not Red Bull.
It was strange. Red Bull are usually quite confident in what they're doing. Like, yeah, I feel like a team like Ferrari just kind of hope for the best a lot of the time, whereas Red Bull actually know what they're doing. So the fact they did start on mediums, they must have been quite convicted about whatever they believed the mediums were going to do, or the softs were going to do, rather. But yeah, that kind of... Well, it came back to bite them later in the race, because the pace on the mediums just... Well, the softs basically never died. So... The mediums just were hampering them all race, which was a bit of a shame for Verstappen and for Latifi was never really going to do much anyway. But yeah, it was a strange decision, and they've not really... Well, I don't think they did explain why. And,
well, the plan was that they could then get a fresh set of the soft compound tyres ready for the Grand Prix. But of course, everyone was looking at it going, well, it's quite an easy one stop from the softs or the mediums to the hards. So, I mean, it didn't end up that way. But it was kind of there, like, you don't really sort of see what you've actually gained out of that, to be honest. But that did mean, though, Kevin Magnussen had a nice, clean getaway from the front of the field, and you just had visions of him going through the first couple of corners, just absolutely panicking just to try and get away from Verstappen whilst he could. I mean, of course, none of us expected to last very long, but we did expect it to last longer than Alonso and Ocon's, well, not really friendship, is it, but they came to blows again twice. On the opening lap.
Alonso was pretty scathing of Ocon in the interview afterwards, but turn four incident, that was completely on Ocon. He just completely forced Alonso over the white line on the outside.
Yes, he was focused on the cars in front, wasn't he, and genuinely didn't notice, didn't notice Alonso on his outside. But I mean,
just like Ocon. He didn't notice Perez on his inside of Eau Rouge at that time. He didn't notice Alonso in Budapest either.
Ocon just makes enemies out of teammates, doesn't he? I don't know what he I don't know what he's like to work with, but there's gotta be something going on there that makes him so just abrasive.
He must just be really abrasive, like, as a person, I think, because, like, Perez has never really had issues with other teammates. We'll get onto that later.
Well, yeah, that's not weekend. Exactly the time to be saying that, but
like,
I know what you mean.
Who else has Ocon been a teammate with?
Alonso, Ricciardo.
Ricciardo just trounced him. Ocon was kind of coming back into the sport at that point.
Yep.
And that's it, isn't it? And
Verline as well, technically, for half season.
Like, eight races. Yeah. But, like, those are drivers. I mean, Alonso's been pretty abrasive to certain teammates, I suppose.
Most of them.
Like, Ocon is just... And Ocon and Gasly's relationship from the, like, kids as well. He just seems like a bit of a nasty guy, I think.
Well, it just doesn't make sense, does it? Like, I can only get... Because we never really sort of get that on TV, do we? Like, if ever they do interviews with him or anything like that. But clearly, there's got to... You've got to, like, read between the lines there. He must be a very different person behind the scenes that he hides very, very well on TV.
Yeah, definitely. But yeah, that was only the first incident, because the second one, Alonso, it was a bit weird because it was kind of like the Stroll incident in the USA with Alonso, where...
Well, not quite.
Not quite, because Ocon didn't move as much, no, but it was a very minor move. I think there was a very slight move to the right, but not enough to make a difference.
If you watch his steering, he only ever moves left.
But does he open it at all?
He doesn't open it. The problem is, of course, they're going through a left-hand corner where they make contact. So whether Alonso thought Ocon was going to go more to the left, I don't know. I mean, at the end of the day, Jamie, and I don't know if you see this different to me, what happened was Alonso crashed into the back of his teammate.
Yeah, yeah, that is what happened. And yeah, I think Alonso was maybe expecting, or like the way the corner was going, Ocon was fully on the left and then was less fully on the left because it's a left-hand corner. But he's perfectly entitled to do that because he's the driver ahead. Yeah. It was a bit weird. And it was fairly similar to USA in that Alonso could have avoided it if he just hadn't been trying to cut it so close.
I feel I feel like they're similar incidents, but very, very different all at the same time.
Yeah.
USA, he had a lot more extra speed, and Stroll made a much, much more aggressive move on an actual straight.
Mm.
Ocon then was going through a left-hand sort of kink, if you will. And Alonso this time around did just crash into him. I was amazed, though, that Ocon didn't get a puncture from that.
Yeah, yeah. The tyres were doing work in the sprint, because the same later on with another incident where there wasn't a puncture. I don't know how. That was just a bit mad, really. But that scuppered both of their races completely. The Alpines, which at the point of history looked like it was a massive problem, because McLaren are really close behind them in the constructors, and they've thrown away a double top eight to qualify in the end. What, P16 and P19?
It was P16 and 17 in the end. They lined up on the grid. We kind of had a few more things going on, though, during the sprint, didn't we? Sergio Perez versus Hamilton. They were both trying to obviously fight their way back through the grid after a rough qualifying session. Stroll then tries to learn how he's going to battle Alonso next year. That is just going to end so badly. He was a very dangerous move on Sebastian Vettel. And of course, you know, Alonso screams on the radio about this, that, and the other. Vettel just says, okay. So whether he's just expecting it at this point, we don't really know.
He just got his slippers on, ready for retirement.
I honestly, Alonso is going to absolutely destroy Aston Martin next year and rip them a new one. That is going to be the most toxic thing I've ever seen. That is going to force him
back
into retirement.
There's going to be so much spice in teams next year, genuinely.
It's literally,
especially
F1
now you've got a Red Bull to
Netflix.
Add to that as well.
Yeah, F1 is just all about Netflix.
Yeah. Yeah. Then the main talking point from the sprint really was this, the battle for the race lead between George Russell and Max Verstappen, who didn't drive off into the distance, I guess partly the medium tyres, but also the Mercedes was just really fast.
Yeah, Red Bull seemed to struggle, didn't they? Because none of us kind of expected it after qualifying, but they really just did not have the... not even dominant pace that they've always shown this year. But
they didn't have race-winning pace.
Well, yeah, not really, did they? It was just a bit weird.
Mm. It was almost like Ferrari's Mexico pace, where they would... Red Bulls had issues, but they probably would have ended up 5th and 6th anyway in a normal race.
Yeah, yeah, I suppose it's fair.
It was... Yeah, it's very strange. But anyway, Russell, obviously that gave him the chance to battle Verstappen because he was right there for him. And it was actually a really good battle for, what, 3 laps?
Yeah.
Like, that's longer than most of the battles we see, so especially ones involving Red Bulls, because once they're through, they're just gone. But Russell and Verstappen, very good racing. We saw a bit of it in Spain between them. Russell seems to have decent racecraft. Obviously, we didn't get a massive chance to see it at his Williams days, but other than when he took out Bottas. Very, very good racing, very exciting battle, and eventually Russell got through, ran the outside of turn 4, was
he
it not?
He literally pulled off the carbon copy move of what Hamilton did last year on Verstappen. He baited him into turn 1 and then got the run down the Esquina del Largo and made the move. And it was kind of one of those ones where we were looking at it going, well, Verstappen's just going to get him past, because even with DRS, the Merc was no quicker than the Red Bull down the straights. It was just the fact Verstappen compromised his run through the center S. That yeah, Russell managed to get an opportunity, and yeah, I kind of just expected Verstappen just to fly back past him, but Russell just kind of walked off after that. It wasn't absolutely dominating, but it was just comfortably faster.
Yeah, and then that obviously left Verstappen in the clutches of Carlos Sainz, who had a very quietly very good weekend, I thought, genuinely.
Yeah.
Generally, he was very solid Sainz all weekend, but ended up passing Verstappen for that second place in the sprint, which is where that contact happened at turn one, with Verstappen trying to cut back in underneath Sainz a bit and then misjudged it, caught his front wing on Sainz's right rear, and somehow there wasn't a puncture, but Verstappen did lose his end plate, so that kind of, yeah, if his pace was already going because of the mediums, it was gone with that end plate missing. But yeah, Sainz was through, and that left Verstappen to defend from Hamilton for the final place on the podium, which one lap later was gone, and Hamilton was through into third from, what, eighth on the grid in the sprint?
So eighth place on
the grid. 2 years a sprint at Brazil, and Hamilton's gained plenty of places.
20 places in 48 laps across two sprint races is not bad going. Not bad
going at all.
But yeah, of course, that meant, you know, we had George Russell, Carlos Sainz, Lewis Hamilton on the podium. Of course, Sainz, it had already been confirmed, would have grid penalties for the race. So out of nowhere, Mercedes had a front row start, a front row lockout for the Grand Prix, despite not getting pole position. There still needs to be a bit of work done with the sprint race logic. Quickly, before we jump into the real though, Grand Prix, though, Jim, I just want to talk, of course, we've had three sprint races again now in 2022. I saw some interesting comments on Twitter from a few people saying that it was ridiculous having a sprint race because it just then meant Kevin Magnussen had 24 more laps where he was going to try and defend himself. Of course, I'm sure Kevin Magnussen would have rather there wasn't a sprint race either after what happened to him at the start of the Grand Prix.
Yeah.
I genuinely don't mind them still. I don't want a sprint race every weekend, but sort of having three or four a year, especially around a track like Brazil where they work, I'm still like having something a little bit different just a few weekends a year.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely think that as well. I think people kind of love to rinse sprint races because you can kind of tell that all of the inner circle of Formula One people, especially in Formula One media, have, I don't know, either been told by the FIA to back them or they just genuinely do quite like them. And people love to have a go at that. But I can only speak for myself, but I've not been paid by the FIA to have a positive
You believe I've
opinion.
Been paid by the FIA?
You never know. I can't rule it out. Yeah, I just quite like them. I think what I always think is better than a practice session.
Yeah.
Like, and that's what it's replacing. And yes, you can say Magnussen only has, well, he has 24 more laps to lose a lead. Well, equally, I don't know, like, who was at the back? I don't know, like Joe or Schumacher, for instance, has now got 24 more laps to make up the places. So it goes both ways completely.
I tell you what, sprint race weekends really suit Mick Schumacher.
They do, because he can't qualify.
Because he can't qualify, and it takes him a while to get used to a race car. They really, really do help him out, because he had a brilliant sprint race. 20th to 12th was very, very good going. He basically gained every place that Kevin Magnussen lost throughout that sprint.
They almost met in the middle.
They did pretty much meet in the middle in the end. It was very, very weird. But, I mean, yeah, like I said, at a track like Brazil, they're really good fun. If they announce they're doing a sprint race at Monaco next year, I'm probably not going to watch it.
No.
But it is just, you know, around Brazil, I feel like Silverstone could get another good shot. It's kind of, I mean, not a lot happened really in the sprint last year, apart from Checo binning it and Verstappen getting the jump on Lewis. But, you know, I feel like we're probably going to see, you know, next year they've confirmed we're having six, haven't they? So we're going to get 30 races when you include sprints next year, which is kind of mental. I think what they're trying to do is just try a few more different circuits and then hopefully in, you know, 3-4 years down the line, we'll have 4-5 tracks with sprint races that can be quite good. If it was you choosing tomorrow, Jamie.
Okay.
Six tracks for sprint races for 2022. Where would you go? Now, remember quickly as well, you cannot host one at Las Vegas because the race is on Saturday night.
Oh yeah, true. I would keep one at Brazil. I think
I feel like we're going to come up with pretty similar ones here.
That's a no-brainer,
but I'm just intrigued. So I'm also going to say Brazil.
I think it'd be quite cool to have one at Bahrain.
I was literally thinking the same thing. Bahrain
as well.
At
the first race of the season, just kick it off with a sprint.
And Bahrain is a brilliant racetrack.
Yeah, it is. Bahrain's one of the top five probably on Canada in terms of racing. I think Silverstone would be a good one. Like, obviously the one last year didn't really do that much. Other than like Alonso having a good start, and that was kind of it, as you said. Two more races.
Three more.
Oh, I thought Silverstone, I said.
Silverstone, Bahrain, Brazil.
Oh yeah, there's six, aren't there?
I'm going to throw one out here. I'm going to say Baku.
Baku would just, like, I remember saying this at the time of Baku. It's not a good race for people who actually like racing. It's a good race for people who like crashes.
I think it has been better the last couple of years.
Yeah, yeah.
I think Baku slightly deserves a sprint race, at least to try it.
Yeah, I think something like China would be cool.
If we even go back to Shanghai.
If we go back to China, that is. But like a track with ridiculously high tyre wear.
Yeah, this is like the thing. This is what I wonder, whether they need to try something different with sprint races. Of give us like ultra soft tyres again.
From F2, whenever they do sprint races at Bahrain, for instance. Mm. The tyre wear basically means it's very close between a zero stop and a one stop.
Yeah.
Which makes for great racing, because you've got drivers genuinely 3 or 4 seconds a lap quicker.
And this is what I think sprint races need. You either need like a hard tyre that will last, but is quite slow, or a really soft tyre that will definitely not last, that's really quick.
Mm. Just to throw in some jeopardy, yeah. Basically. And you do it at the high tyre wear tracks, such as China or Bahrain or whatever.
Yeah.
See, I'd throw in Shanghai if we go back there.
Yep.
I'm trying to remember other tracks now. I mean, the Monza sprint was quite good. So yeah, I'll throw Monza in there.
What, last year?
Yeah, it was fairly good, wasn't it?
All I remember
I didn't watch it.
I thought it was pretty dull. I thought Gasly binned it, sorry, and not a lot else happened, if I remember correctly.
I just enjoyed it because Hamilton lost his pole position.
Okay.
I mean, Saudi Arabia is always quite entertaining. Again, for similar reasons to Baku.
I think what Saudi Arabia needs is a Grand Prix and then a sprint afterwards.
Yeah.
Just have the grid bunched back up again.
Yeah.
That would be chaos.
I mean, last 2021 Saudi was basically like 4 different sprints in the one Grand Prix.
It basically was, wasn't it? I always think back to Saudi last year and think, what if Mick hadn't been there and that race had
that
just
such
been
a ridiculous race.
It wasn't really a race, though, was it? It was a farce.
It was an absolute chaos. It was quite entertaining.
It was a farce at the end of the day. But yeah, I mean, there's other tracks that we like to
see. That would be my six.
Sprint races. Yeah, I think we're pretty similar there. I'm trying to think of any others that I wouldn't mind seeing.
Basically, you want either tracks that are good, very good for overtaking, or quite chaotic.
Yeah.
And you don't want tracks like Zandvoort or Mexico or Monaco or... Yeah.
I was going to say Mexico might work, but... It would have to require flexible engine modes or something like that.
Why? Why would engine modes make a difference?
Because then cars can go full tilt rather than always struggling.
What they should do is they should, like...
They just need to sink the Mexico circuit to sea level, don't they?
Just raise sea level. No, that would make a difference, would it?
No, it won't.
I mean, we're doing our best, aren't we? Just take Mexico and put it by the coast.
Yeah.
And then it'll be a good race.
Exactly. I mean, Mexico has a lot of coastline, but just Mexico City. Put it on the coast. Let's actually... We have gone off a tangent there like no tomorrow. Let's discuss then, Jamie, the Grand Prix itself. Brazil.
Yes.
We've got homeboy Hamilton on the front row next to his teammate. Or honorary homeboy Hamilton.
Homeboy Hamilton from Sao Paulo.
I saw an edit on TikTok a couple of weeks ago. From someone dubbing Hamilton the King of Stevenage. And I sort of thought, I'm not even sure that's a title he would want.
No,
at the end
no.
of the day.
It's certainly not like... Yeah. If you compare Sao Paulo to Stevenage, I feel like you come up with a few differences. But yeah, Stevenage has probably got better bike lanes from what I know about Stevenage. That's about it.
Okay. talk me through the race start, Jamie.
Yes. I didn't watch the race live either. But I have watched it back with basically comprehensive highlights. But yeah, Mercedes won 2, of course, and they got away well, which we sort of expected. It's a very short one to turn 1. So Russell led from Hamilton. Norris started 5th behind the 2 Red Bulls, went very aggressive into turn one and turn four, actually, but didn't make either move come off quite. And so both Red Bulls comfortable 3-4. What Lando did do was screw himself on the entry to Ferradura and made, nope, that was the restart. Never mind.
That was the restart. Well done.
Yes. Let's not go off script. Every word of this is scripted, if you didn't know. But yeah, into turn six, the midfield was where the action was happening, which, yeah, unfortunately, in true F1 fashion, the fairy tale of Friday night was cut very short in the race, and Kevin Magnussen was completely binned off by Daniel Ricciardo.
He was sent to the shadow realm.
Yes.
But, yeah. Now, Ricciardo got all the blame for this, and rightfully so. He did turn Kevin Magnussen around. However, Kevin Magnussen should have held his brake there, and he could have probably... Obviously, again, it would have then been down to pot luck about whether another driver avoided him, but he wouldn't have hit Ricciardo.
Yeah, it annoys me when drivers... It's almost like they're... I mean, obviously, you're a Formula One driver, you're going to be quite selfish, but they are, in those situations, when drivers spin up their wheels to get to, like, pirouette around quicker. That's so... dumb.
I'm not even convinced that's what K-Mag was doing. Because let's be fair, when we say that, we both think of 2019 Spain Romain Grosjean, don't we?
2018.
Was it? No, it was Rich Energy.
No, it wasn't. Oh, it
was.
Wait.
No, it was 2018.
It was 18.
Yeah,
it was
he
18.
Hit Gasly, didn't he? And Gasly was in Toro Rosso.
Yeah, Gasly and Hulk.
Yes.
My boys
yeah,
were both
that was
out
quite
on that one.
Funny. That
was
they the were most... both out on that one.
I was just depressed. The rest of the race was rubbish.
I don't think that's what K-Mag was actually trying to do this time around. It looked like he was trying to get the car out of the way a lot more.
I'm not sure. You're all acting on instinct at that point, really, aren't you?
But yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it was
hindsight
slightly is
a beautiful
unwise.
Thing.
Yeah, but yeah, maybe he definitely could have, like, done himself a favour by not just pirouetting into the path of another driver.
Yeah.
But it was obviously on Ricciardo. We're not blaming Magnussen at all.
And it was a fair job that he hit Ricciardo again. It wasn't like David Coulthard 2008, where he just gets involved in someone else's crash again.
Yeah.
I mean, the onboard from Ricciardo, it sounds like a really hefty whack, doesn't it?
It was pretty hefty.
It sounds like quite a violent impact, to be honest. But yeah, it immediately meant that we had a safety car restart. So George Russell at the front of the field, brilliant getaway. I was then immediately panicking because now Max Verstappen is close to my boys. And we both know what Verstappen could be like.
Right, here we go. Only took 33 minutes.
This is probably going to be one of the two big talking points of the night. I feel like the other one, we might agree with a little bit more on, but this one I feel like we're not going to see eye to eye, are we?
We are reasonable.
We are reasonable.
The name of the podcast comes from that.
Exactly. But let's not try and hide any facts away for a second, Jamie. You are a Max Verstappen fan.
Yes.
I am a Lewis Hamilton fan. We're not going to try and deny these allegations. Now, the way... Again, this is the horrible thing as well, of course, with incidents like this, because you see pictures on Twitter. We can agree here, pictures are the worst sense of evidence in Formula One, because they give you no context
in
to
most
what
sports,
is going on.
To be
in
fair.
Most sports, you're absolutely right.
Because football, people always pause when someone's two-footing someone, but they pause it on the instant they get the ball.
Yeah.
And they forget to include where they broke their leg.
Yeah, 3 seconds beforehand.
Yeah.
Now,
yeah.
The way I see it, Verstappen tries to get the run around the outside of Hamilton. He gets into turn one ahead. I completely agree.
Mm-hmm.
But he's pretty much fully behind, because he's taken so much speed into turn one. As they head down into turn two, he's actually got his front wheels alongside Hamilton's rear wheels.
Yeah.
At that point, Max Verstappen should have backed out because it's no longer his corner at turn two. What, of course, he actually does is tries to get the car to the apex as quickly as possible to try and make it his corner. Now, there's a lot more, obviously, to this incident, of course, that I feel like a lot of people forget almost. Because let's be fair, there's a much bigger picture between Hamilton and Verstappen. Because they haven't really fought this year, it's kind of been forgotten about. But there is an almighty grudge match going on behind the scenes between these two.
Yeah, they do not get on.
Because what's basically happened, of course, over the last few years is Verstappen has gone in with a similar mentality to what Ayrton Senna used to do, which was he will put the car in a position where it's up to you to decide whether you're having a crash or not.
Yeah.
Now, that means that pretty much every other driver on the grid will back out in that situation, doesn't it? Lewis did that at the start of last year, at Imola and Spain most notably, and then kind of realised, why on earth should I do this anymore? Because he's just going to do it every time. So since then, whether it's made sense or not for Lewis, he's basically known he cannot back out with Max because Max will simply never do it for him. Is that all fair?
I think so. Yeah, I think...
Because...
Sometimes, obviously, the big one was Silverstone, where, like...
Yeah, the two big ones were Silverstone and Monza, weren't they, really?
Yeah, yeah. Where, like, either driver could have avoided it, but because one driver was going for the move, it was probably slightly more on them.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Now, again, of course, you know, I think a lot of people kind of forget about this, but there is so much psychology behind racing drivers. Of course, when they're acting on instinct and things like that, a lot of it has got to be automatic. They've got to retrain their brains in these situations.
And you have to believe that you're better than the other driver. I remember I heard something from David Coulthard, like, well, back when he was teammates with Hakkinen. He, going into, like, 2001 even, he genuinely had to convince himself, and did convince himself, that he can still be better than Hakkinen.
Yeah,
because if you're going in without that mentality, you're just going to get trounced.
There's no point being there. If you don't believe you're the best, there's no point being there at Formula One at the end of the day. Now, again, obviously, we haven't seen this much this year between Lewis and Max, but Lewis knows full well, going into Turn 2, he has to close that door on Verstappen.
Yeah.
Obviously, Verstappen has come out after the Grand Prix saying that he just put the car there. It didn't matter for him. It cost him 5 seconds, which is not true because he had to pit. but it cost Hamilton a race victory. This is something, of course, that Verstappen did last year at Monza as well, because he knew that the Merc was faster that weekend. Sometimes he still will put his car in a situation where he knows there's going to be a crash unless the other driver backs out. With most drivers, that's going to work. Hamilton knows full well every time they are in a wheel-to-wheel battle, whether it's this year, last year, in the future, any potential championship fight they're going to have again, they are going to keep colliding.
Yeah, until one of them backs down, which I don't think will happen.
Really. Neither of them can anymore. This is the problem, I think, that a lot of people have got to understand. Neither of those two drivers, if they're going wheel-to-wheel into a corner anymore, can back out. Unless you know, you've got other circumstances where one of them's got a big championship lead or something like this.
Yeah.
Which, again, you'd then believe Max Verstappen would back out of it, but, of course, the title's wrapped up. From his side of things, he's thinking, I don't care.
Yeah, I've already won it. Who cares?
Yeah. It's really, really difficult, but at the end of the day, it's kind of that weird thing, isn't it, of that won't be the last time they crash. But apart from just giving them normal penalties, you can't really do anything about it either.
No. It's almost bigger than the stewards, their feud. Because, like, all the stewards do is take an incident at surface level and give an appropriate
penalty.
They
can't base it on driver psychology or anything like that. And this is the thing at the end of the day. Because, again, you know, the only drivers that refused to back out with Senna were the likes of Alain Prost, who obviously was able to keep battling with him for championships.
Yeah,
you know, every other driver, pretty much, is pushed to the side in those situations. And
this is why I really want another Hamilton-Verstappen title battle, just because it'd be good crack, really.
It would be absolutely insane, again. I'm not sure how well I'd be able to cope with it, my poor heart. But it's kind of that thing, isn't it? It's fantastic sport up to a certain point. But sometimes you just want to go to both of them. It's almost like you need the FIA to really come down hard.
You
want to
bash their heads together, really, and say, stop.
This is, it's kind of got to be that thing of, say, for example, let's say next year we end up in another situation like 2021, where they're in an all-out championship scrap. Say six races from the end of the year, Hamilton and Verstappen do that again at Brazil. Whoever you appoint the blame to, you want to say, if you two come together like that, you're out of the championship. We are not having you two constantly doing this over and over and over. Whether it'll actually make a difference or not is a very different question.
And also, the FA
there is
have not
so
got...
much at play between these two.
They wouldn't do that.
They wouldn't do that, no, absolutely. But it's the only ever way they can put a stop to this. Because it will just happen every single time.
I don't know if they want to put a stop to it. It causes so many moments that people talk about. It's like they just want to let the world burn. Like,
it's kind of that difficult thing, isn't it? Because again, you know, a lot of people go, oh, well, Verstappen has been able to race cleanly with everyone else this year. It's quite clear who's the problem. Everyone else backs out. Hamilton has been able to race cleanly, with the exception of the incident with Alonso. Hamilton's been able to race cleanly.
They have beef as well.
They have beef. But again, we look back at brilliant battles last year. One of the best battles of last season was Alonso and Hamilton at Hungary.
Yeah.
It was Hamilton, like, again, Hamilton misjudged it at Belgium. We can completely admit that. Even as a Hamilton fan, I'd say he messed up. He made a mistake. 300 races in, it's bound to happen from time to time.
His first mistake, yeah?
Exactly. But the older drivers, like, again, Formula One reposted this clip earlier on in the week, didn't they, of Kimi and Schumacher battling at Brazil. We have got ourselves into an issue now in Formula One, and I know we've spoken about this before countless times, where we won't get battles like that anymore because that's not what the drivers are brought up and shown to do anymore.
No.
We are going to get more incidents.
The problem was the FIA
crashes.
didn't come down hard on Verstappen in 2015.
Exactly. It all stemmed from there when you had all the other drivers that are now coming into Formula 1 that were in F3 or F4 or GP2 at the time.
Watching Verstappen rinse the midfield by doing moves like that.
Exactly.
Which, were very exciting because before that, F1 hadn't seen anything like it before.
Because there was
now
a lot more respect.
Yeah, that's all we get. And when you have one driver out of 19 doing it, it's quite entertaining. When you have
soon enough, it's
15 out of 20.
Yeah, most of them.
It's like suddenly you're just having crashes that could be avoided.
Yeah.
But shall we get back onto the topic? Because I feel like I've not said a word about the actual incident.
You were agreeing with me.
You're basically right, unfortunately.
As always, knowing we
are. I do think, yeah, both of them could have avoided it. But because Verstappen was going for the move, it's kind of his responsibility to not crash.
Yes.
But, yeah, neither was obviously going to back out. It was unfortunate. Verstappen, I think penalty is a little harsh, but it was always going to happen.
It needed to be done, didn't it?
Yeah.
And I think this is that, of course, Verstappen's come out afterwards saying that it didn't really matter for him and it did for Lewis. That, especially obviously with everything else that went on that Grand Prix, it was quite clear that Verstappen knew he'd probably made a bit of a cock-up in that moment.
Yeah.
And probably he knows... The thing is, again, of course, he knows that wasn't the right thing to do. But you cannot admit that either.
No.
Because obviously...
He's not going to go and say, oh, I made a mistake. Sorry, Lewis.
Exactly.
That's never going to happen.
This is just the weirdly toxic kind of spiral this has turned into. And it just won't ever probably get better. And I mean, obviously, Hamilton said after the race as well, of course, he knows what Max is like. It's going to keep happening. But we've
just kind of
got to happen. It doesn't happen too much.
I want 2023 to be an absolute mess of them two battling for
a championship. It could be an absolute spice fest again. But it is certainly a dangerous sort of preface, isn't it? Because again,
I just think if we get one more season of them two going for a title, this will be a defining era of Formula One. Like, it arguably already is, but I think if you get one more, it will be like a Senna Prost level rivalry.
I think it already is.
I think only having one proper championship season like that, it's a bit like,
course, was the way it was tarnished last year.
Yeah.
Because, of course, when Senna and Prost came to blows a couple of times, that was all on themselves.
Apart from the FA handing Prost the championship, but...
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, like, the actual collisions came from themselves. But, again, I think this is the horrible thing as well, of course, you know. For me, that's obviously watched Hamilton since he came to the sport 15 years ago. You know, he doesn't race anyone else like that. But people only remember these battles now, don't they? Because, again, you know, we always remember the crashes or the incidents, things like that. Hamilton, with pretty much any other driver on the grid, is generally pretty... I'd argue he's still in that group of four or five drivers that is pretty respectful still. He'll push you, but he won't push you over the limit. He has to
apart
with Max.
From with Rosberg.
I wouldn't even say with Rosberg there was any particularly moments like this.
Moments like that, but that's because Rosberg just got pushed around until he just stopped getting pushed around.
You mean stopped racing in Formula One? But I wouldn't even say it was. It was nothing. It was never really like that, though, was it? Particularly.
Oh, there were three in a row. There were three in a row in 2015 where every time Hamilton just pushed him off at turn one.
Yeah.
And he knew what he was doing, and it was just not really on, but he got away with it.
But they weren't massive contact or anything.
No, Hamilton just ushered him over the white line into some grass or gravel.
It wasn't grass or gravel, was it?
At Japan, it was. USA just forced him
wide. Yeah, USA just forced him wide. Japan, I don't actually genuinely remember, to be honest.
Rosberg on pole, Hamilton second.
Was
Hamilton
it at turn two?
Turn one.
Yes,
yeah,
at turn two. I do remember that. Sorry, yeah, yeah. And the third one?
Yeah. There was one, whatever race was before Japan. I can't. It was three races in a row at the end of 2015. Potentially Russia. I can't remember which race it was. But yeah, okay. It's in the past.
Yeah, right. Anyway, that's our big sort of, because I mean, this was probably one of the big talking points of the race and sort of bigger picture as well, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Kind of navigated. Let's get back on then to the safety car restart. Of course, that incident happens down at turn two, and then bless him, Lando Norris kills Charles Leclerc at turn six.
I feel for Lando in that.
He clipped the inside curb and made a mistake. It was kind of one of those horrible incidents that, you know, was worse because of where it was, but yeah. It was still his error.
It was, yeah, slightly, unfortunately, but
slightly. It was like, entirely, mate. Well, even as a Lando fan, it was entirely. Bless him.
Yeah.
It.
So that was what, battling for third at the time.
Yes.
On the restart.
Yeah.
And yeah, that left what, Sebastian Vettel in third place for a bit, I believe.
Very
was
briefly. Can we quickly mention how Leclerc didn't retire from that incident?
Yeah.
That like the fact that. Like, because I was watching it with my mum, my sister, and my sister's boyfriend, and he went, I think Charles' still going. I think I just saw him in the background. I was like, there's no way. We're going to cut back to that Ferrari with its front suspension destroyed. And then suddenly he was just there racing.
Yeah, yeah. I think he actually scrubbed off a lot of the speed in the spin, but it's still amazing that he didn't lose a wheel.
It was just the fact he hit it completely square on. Like, the front wings at the moment, like, if you hit a wall, like Hamilton at Singapore, if you hit a wall completely square on like that, it's not actually that bad normally. But it's just if you hit it at anything more than about 5 degrees, then it just destroys the car.
Yeah, yeah. But Leclerc carried on, dropped to last. That was, what, Verstappen and Leclerc battling through the field for the rest of the race.
Hamilton as well was down back into P8 he was in the sprint.
So it left Russell was kind of just driving off, which,
well, Perez was keeping up with him early on.
Yeah There was a little bit of jeopardy. Unfortunately, this is a lot of the, because I watched a shortened version of the highlights in Channel 4, this is a lot of the part of the race they cut out, so I have no real clue what happened.
There was kind of there was a lot going on, but none of it was particularly exciting, because of course we just kind of had cars shuffling themselves around and getting into the order. And then of course we just had Max, Leclerc, and obviously Hamilton trying to carve their way back through. I guess the other interesting thing that was going on was strategy, of course, because Hamilton was able to extend his first set of soft tyres to the end of lap 30. He got about, I think it was 7 or 8 laps longer than George and Sainz. But it kind of then was begging the question of, were Merck going to try and one-stop Hamilton? Of course, it didn't really make any difference at the end of the day, but they brought Hamilton in before George for his second stop, I think because they were worried about potentially accidentally screwing George on the wrong strat.
And I think, was it Sainz or Perret? I think it was Sainz who pit early.
Yeah, he had to pit earlier because of his brakes.
Yeah, but they, well, that's what they told Hamilton, was that they were scared of the undercut from Sainz.
But I don't think that was really the case.
Yeah, yeah.
It seemed like Mercedes wanted to let both their drivers have a fair shot at it, but they didn't want to give either of them a different fair shot.
A massively different strategy, which we saw from Mercedes all through the Hamilton-Rosberg era.
Yeah, I can kind of understand it. You know, there's no bigger picture here this weekend. It was kind of, we want one of our cars to win. Let's just try and get both
cars.
Let's
play it safe almost.
And, you know, I think especially obviously by the end of the Grand Prix, you kind of think fair play to Mercedes for not trying to create a rivalry within the team either. Because they're going to be one of very few teams next year that goes in with not much beef.
Yeah, genuinely, what? There'll be 6 teams probably, I think, that have something bad happening.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But I mean, we nothing really exciting happened until lap 52, was it? Where suddenly out of nowhere, Lando Norris's car just shuts off.
Yeah, because he's in my team. He had a mechanical failure.
Of course. So you
screwed
him.
That's how it goes. Yeah. At least 2 of my 5 retire every week. So yeah, that it was. I don't understand why it took the FAA so long to put a safety car out for that, to be honest.
Because originally they could have I looked at that originally and went, that should be a virtual safety car. Because you think they'd just be able to wheel that car away.
But they kept under double wave yellows for a decent amount of time.
Like, I think it's because they wanted Lando to get out and away from the car first of all.
Yeah, maybe that's fair enough then. But yeah, did he leave it in gear or was it because it was on a hill or something that they couldn't roll it?
I think it was a hydraulics failure, so it wouldn't come out of gear.
Yeah, so it took a while to get rid of it. But that was a safety car. Everyone, well, basically everyone, pit apart from Perez because he'd recently pit for mediums and going to the end. I'm not sure, did he have any softs left?
I don't... Probably not. No, because he doubled soft early on, I think.
Yeah.
So yeah, Perez kind of got screwed in all of that.
Yeah, so he was up to second, I think, but on those medium tyres, with Russell still leading, Hamilton third, and these two Ferraris. Leclerc just somehow appeared in fifth place after being wingless at the start. And yeah, weirdly, Tsunoda was kind of left out to dry by the FIA.
So this was what I'd read. Now, it wasn't from a credible source, so I can't guarantee that it was accurate. So what basically I've established this weekend, Jamie, was after obviously Abu Dhabi last year, we just can't escape Abu Dhabi last year. what the FIA have done is turned it into an automated system now for lap traffic. So apparently what happened, now I'm not saying this is a valid excuse, but apparently what happened was because Yuki Pitt, he was then ahead of the safety car, but then obviously boxed and came back out behind it. So apparently the system thought he'd unlapped himself when obviously he quite clearly hadn't.
Yeah.
And surely still you should be able to override said system and still... Because
and
let's be
message,
fair,
yeah.
Letting lapped cars unlap themselves should not be rocket science in Formula One.
No.
It should not be that difficult to get all the cars on the same lap in the correct order.
Even co-masters can get that right.
Normally, yes.
Actually, maybe they can't.
I don't actually think... No, you can't unlap yourself on
the
safety cars
anymore.
No, you
can't unlap yourself, can you? Never mind. Maybe they got co-masters to implement their system into real life, which is why it doesn't work.
Jamie, I don't agree with you on that one.
This is, Matt's views are not shared by me.
No.
That's only my opinion. and that is a joke for legal reasons. But yes, what were we saying? Tsunoda, was never... just never unlapped himself, which is really bizarre because even if the system doesn't work, well, firstly make a better system, secondly just overrule it, as he said.
Just let him go through.
but
I guess by that point, of course, there's been so much I mean, let's be fair, we were under safety car VSC / safety car for 9 laps by this point. This had already gone so badly, I think the FIA were kind of there like, right, I'm sorry Tsunoda, you're taking the short straw here and you're just having your last 10 laps ruined by our own incompetence. Because I mean, that should have been a 5-lap safety car. I get that they had issues getting Lando's car off the circuit, but that should have come in and out a whole lot quicker than it did, because it looked like they were moving Lando's car about halfway around the circuit for whatever reason.
They're just trying to get it down the hill to the next nearest. A bit daft.
It's just because Brazil's such a weird layout, because it's all
then as Hamilton Twitter fans would have you know, that completely voids the result from that point
onwards. Yes, of course.
George Russell
doesn't get
51.
The win. Yeah. Imagine trying to come up with that hashtag. Avoid lap 52, lap 53, lap 54. I mean, there was a subtle bit of irony there, wasn't there?
It's completely different.
Completely,
it wasn't,
of course.
It wasn't like they only let one. Actually, no, maybe it was the same. What other cars lapped?
Latifi.
Yeah, well, that does void lap 53 then.
There we go. The Brazilian Grand Prix, George Russell.
If you only let one lap driver through and not the rest, that's outrageous.
Exactly. Yuki Tsunoda deserves, you bless him. Yeah.
Why are you going to finish that sentence?
I don't know. Just
right.
Absolute
restart then. What actually happened?
Right, race restart. I mean, Sergio Perez just goes backwards. Kind of was the big thing, wasn't it? And let's be fair. The main talking point between then and the end all kicked off on lap 67. George Russell's dominated away again. Hamilton's keeping fairly close to him, but not really able to apply any pressure. And we've got Sainz P3, Leclerc P4 after both on the jump checker. Perez, Alonso then, of all people, goes past Sergio. And on lap 67, he gets the call to let Verstappen by, so Verstappen can try and jump Charles Leclerc. up the road.
Alonso first.
And Alonso, but they're not really worried about him. They're just worried about Charles Leclerc. And by the end of lap 71, Max doesn't let Checo back past.
Well, I want to hear your opinion on this first.
We should have let him back past. I think the problem is we kind of need to explain the bigger context behind this, don't we? Now, I actually did a video, Jamie, on my second channel earlier on discussing this, just as a bit of a preface to Knowing Wheel tonight. Now, this really actually starts in Abu Dhabi last year. Okay?
Well, when Perez helps Verstappen to the championship.
So Perez holds up Lewis Hamilton for what, about, was it 11 or 12 seconds in the space of three laps for Max Verstappen?
Yeah.
The quote, Checo is a legend. Without Sergio Perez doing that, Verstappen wouldn't have been world champion last year because Hamilton would have had the gap to come in, box, fresh set of tyres, would have walked away from Verstappen off that restart like he'd pretty much done all afternoon.
Well, Verstappen could have just sent it and killed them both.
Yeah, and then would have been disqualified and wouldn't have won the championship. So Perez literally, you're not going to argue this as a Verstappen fan, he actually won Verstappen that world championship that last year.
As did Antonio Giovinazzi for retiring with the
DSC. Of course. Then we move into 2022. Early on in the year, I think there's already a bit of tension bubbling up at Red Bull. Of course, they both retire in Bahrain. Sergio then gets pole in Jeddah. Verstappen, I imagine, is immediately not happy because I'm the number one in this team. You've got to make the
probably
car suit
confused
me.
Confused more than anything.
Confused as well, but unhappy. Of course, Checo gets screwed in Jeddah. Max gets the win. It kind of gets brushed under the rug a little bit, doesn't it? We then get to Spain. Now, this is the one that I think everyone's forgotten about. Of course, it didn't really make any difference in the actual race overall. But early on in that Grand Prix, if you remember, Jamie, of course, we saw Verstappen and Sainz spin quite early on in the race.
Mm-hmm.
Then Perez is quicker than Verstappen for quite a few laps because they're on different strategies. Checo begs with the team to let him past, and they tell him
no. They
don't
let him, yeah.
Of course, at the end of the day, Verstappen was on a quicker strategy anyway. He would have won the Grand Prix. It didn't make much difference. But it's understandable for Perez. He's annoyed at that point, the fact that we're early on in the championship. It's still not really clear that Verstappen has got a big advantage over Checo. Checo is hanging on pretty well with him for pace early on in the year. Then we get to Monaco, where, of course, this is kind of what's come out now.
Where Perez deliberately crashes in qualifying.
Well, just remember, this was only confirmed by Dutch media. It's been repeated around the rest of the place. Now, I'm not saying whether it's true or false necessarily, but it was only confirmed by Dutch media, and that's where everyone is believing that it's suddenly immediately true. Tom Coronel, I would argue, is not a credible source, personally.
He used to follow me on Twitter.
He used to follow everyone on Twitter. He also, if I remember correctly, during a World Touring Car event at the Nürburgring, after he took pole position, turns out he had his phone with him and filmed a selfie and filmed a video whilst going around the track. Which, let's be fair, if someone did that in Formula One, they would probably be banned for life for doing.
I don't know. Mark Webber took the helmet off during a race.
And he was given a penalty for it.
Which he never served.
Never served, but still. So Jenson Button still got a penalty when he comes back to Formula One. It just happens from time to time. I've watched that footage back today. It's not good for Checo, don't get me wrong. But because Monaco is such a weird circuit, I do genuinely believe that a lot more weird stuff can happen in your driving style around that venue. Whether it, honestly, for me looking at it, whether it was Checo thought he was going to hit the inside wall, blasted the power just quickly to push the front end out away from the apex, and then, of course, looped it round. But, of course, people are going, well, he didn't try to save it or anything like that. What difference does trying to save the car at Monaco? You're hitting a wall one way or another. I don't genuinely believe. Because let's not also forget, Checo was in P3 at that point of qualifying. He wasn't on pole.
Yeah.
What does he really gain by beating Max to P3? No, he was P3.
Was it Friday?
Sainz had already got... Leclerc was fastest at the moment, and Sainz was quicker than him as well. Perez is only trying to lock himself P3 away from Verstappen, which seems pretty pointless. I don't understand.
Yeah.
I don't genuinely believe, for me, in any rational world, why Perez would deliberately crash there. And I don't genuinely believe Perez is the kind of person that would deliberately crash there either. Because if he wanted to do that, he would have done a Rosberg, from a couple of years earlier.
And not damaged the car, yeah.
And not damaged the car at all. Or not ran the risk of damaging the car. Rosberg braked 50 metres too late into a braking zone that was 100 metres long. I'm sorry, Jamie, I do not buy that. But then again,
well,
I completely understand. Then
so we move.
Exactly. Then you can genuinely, like, I want a piece of honesty from you for a second. You cannot believe Rosberg did that accidentally.
I think he was very clever in the way that he did it.
That does not answer the question.
He was incredibly smart.
I mean, it worked for him that weekend. I'll credit where it's due.
It did.
But that was pretty much then when the relationship died between those two, wasn't it? And Hamilton made that very clear. Of course, the rest of the year goes off pretty quietly. Verstappen dominates. Obviously, the car after about Azerbaijan was very clearly working for Verstappen far more than Sergio. He dominates
even in
the
Baku,
world cycle.
Perez got pole and then had to let Verstappen through for the win, even as a 1-2.
Yes, yeah.
So there's more team orders there.
Exactly, against Perez.
In Verstappen's favour, yeah.
Yeah, so really then, of course, it's kind of all forgotten about. I don't understand from Verstappen's side of things why at the end of the year, when you've got it all wrapped up, Red Bull have never had a 1-2 in the Constructors' Championship. Verstappen's not going to look back in 5 years and go, wow, I'm so happy I finished P6 in Brazil. The only reason he did that was because he knew he'd get protection from the team, and it was a really childish and, to be honest, I think for Verstappen, far more damaging than it ever will be for Checo. Because let's be fair, P2 in the championship doesn't really matter that much.
No, not at all.
If you're worlds away,
F1's doing a huge thing about it.
There's no money for it. All it really matters for Checo is maybe down the line he's going to be able to get some more sponsors and they can hype him up as runner-up to his teammate. Red Bull get their first ever 1-2 overall at the end of the year. And maybe it's good for Verstappen at the negotiating table in a couple of years' time where he goes, well, I did everything I could in that car. I beat every other car still that year. Verstappen gains nothing from this. He just potentially gets now a teammate that next year won't help him and won't move out of the way as much.
Yeah. I think the daft thing is, really, like, I don't know at what point, but it wasn't in the highlights that I watched, but what corner or what, where was it that Perez let Verstappen through?
Up to turn one. He gave him the inside line into the first corner.
Was it
as clear as day?
So it was. I know it's a team order, but like, had they just not given a team order,
they had given the team
order. Anyway, I know they had.
Oh, sorry,
like,
if they hadn't given the team order,
had they not?
Yeah.
Then Verstappen would have passed him maybe a lap later. So
probably, to be fair, yeah.
In that case, Verstappen then just drives off and finishes sixth with no controversy.
Controversy.
Sean Connery.
But
here.
Even then, I mean, the same thing happened in the sprint, though, didn't it? Where Perez was behind Verstappen. Why don't you just? Because again, I mean, this is the thing, isn't it? Let's not beat around the bush here. Verstappen threw his toys out the pram. He'd had a terrible Grand Prix weekend when it didn't really matter anymore. And he just knew nothing bad's going to happen behind the scenes from the
team.
He
wanted to make a point, I think.
But what point was he trying to make?
I don't know what point.
It just seemed stubborn and short-sighted and just, honestly, downright stupid from Verstappen.
It was very dumb, yeah. I think every world champion has points in their career where they make unwise decisions. Fernando Alonso has quite a lot.
Most of Alonso's career
choosing,
is unwise
choosing
decisions.
What team to go to, usually. I think he'll probably look back on this end of his career and regret it a bit like Seb with Malaysia 2013. It is what it is. I think at the end of the day, it won't define either of their careers, I don't think. But it's just Verstappen being a bit plebish to his teammate. Yeah. But then every world champion's ruthless. I think it's not that surprising.
There's a difference, though, isn't there? You know, there's a difference between, like, again, I think obviously.
Well, Hungary 2014, Hamilton cost the team a win by not giving his teammate a shot.
But again, this is the horrible balance, isn't it? Of course, because
that one actually made.
There's
like,
a championship
massive.
On the line there. And again, you know, the other example that people are using is Hungary 2017, where Hamilton let Bottas through, even though I think he was still behind Seb in the championship, wasn't he, at that point?
He was, yeah.
There's a difference between, you know, your world champions like your Hamiltons and, yeah, champions like your Schumachers or your Verstappens.
Yeah.
And even then, Indianapolis 2002, whether Schumacher meant to or not, let Rubens Barrichello by, he did give him back the win. I mean, it's like Sebastian Vettel in 2013, but I feel like Verstappen's got even more of a rap around that team. Because let's be fair, if we end up in some world next year where Perez is on pace with Verstappen, which to me is unlikely, this, we aren't suddenly going to see Sergio Perez now be a championship threat next year against Max Verstappen. He's not fast enough.
No.
But what we might find on the other hand is Verstappen's now got a teammate that won't cooperate with him, and if he needs another Abu Dhabi, he's screwed. And rightfully so. Because you've got to keep your friends close in Formula One.
He has just kind of made an enemy.
You don't make many friends on a Formula One race. You've got to keep the ones that you get on with very, very close. Because let's be fair, Verstappen, I can't genuinely think, of course, apart from the AlphaTauris having to get out of the way, I can't genuinely think of anyone else that would help him in any situation.
Lando, I think, would back him. I think like Lando always gets on very well.
Yeah, I suppose Lando was probably, the only one.
That's why he should replace Perez.
But, let's be fair, if Perez does start mucking around next year and actually fighting for himself, all they're going to do is promote De Vries up and just have another pushover and just the Dutch super
Dutch
team.
Dutch teammate, yeah.
Verstappen loses nothing
Red
by
Bull
this, and I think
Verstappen
that's what's
has
so annoying.
Power. Yeah. I mean, I don't really care, to be honest. I think it's a bit childish. It's a bit not very...
It's
not chivalrous at all.
Like we spoke about with Hamilton and Verstappen, it just, for me, takes a little bit of the integrity and sort of the respect away from the sport.
It's not sportsmanlike.
No.
No. But then I feel for him a slight bit, because the team could have just not stepped in. Verstappen would have passed him. And there you go. That's it.
But the only reason the team did step in... all the time in Verstappen's favour as well.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. It's a weird one. I don't. My opinion of Verstappen has not really changed. He's always been this kind of.
This is the thing, isn't it? Like, if you like Verstappen for these sort of things, it don't make any difference.
Yeah.
If you dislike Verstappen for sort of things, you dislike him even more. It's pretty simple.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, though, of course, all of this controversy and everything like that kind of made George Russell's first ever Formula One win slightly less sort of the big thing. It absolutely, and I mean, it still is obviously a very, very big thing, but it kind of did take away a little bit of the shimmer from it, didn't it, bless him? Because that has been 4 years of utter pain and misery for George Russell up to now. Bahrain 2020, 3 years in a Williams, when, let's be fair, he probably could have done a Charles Leclerc and been promoted up to help Hamilton in 2020.
Definitely, yeah.
But it
must have been painful to see his F2 rivals getting shots in top teams.
Yeah.
Way quicker than he got when he trounced everyone in F2 when he was there.
Exactly.
But fair play to him. It was actually a really composed race. It gave me.
You know what it reminded me of?
I really hope 2017.
Oh, he was going to say a different race to me. Honestly, that win reminded me of Hamilton's first win. Safety cars,
A
lot of stuff going on, and just cool, calm,
kept
composed, and just stayed at the front all day long.
Yeah, and I think when you look back at. Canada 07 or Malaysia 17, which was Verstappen's second win. You kind of look back and think, oh, that happens a lot more now.
Yeah.
And at the time, it was quite surprising that Malaysia 17, Verstappen basically just dominated after taking the lead. And this race, Russell always had in his pocket, it felt like.
Yeah.
And it was kind of surprising because it's his first win that he was that composed.
Yeah.
But I think we'll look back in 5 years' time and be like, oh, he does that all the time now.
Quite probably.
We'll probably be like, why were we even excited? He's got about 50 wins.
Exactly. I mean, let's be fair. We all know how good of a driver George Russell is. And of course, it did make me chuckle the fact I said literally last week that he's probably going to have a quiet last few Grand Prix and finish sixth every week. And immediately he goes and dominates.
He goes and wins.
And wins a sprint.
This is your
weekend.
Predictions summed up for the whole season.
It pretty much is, isn't it, in a nutshell. But... I'm really happy for the lad, bless him. I mean, he will take over the Mercedes gauntlet when Hamilton goes. It's also good because we knew already, but British Motorsport is in very safe hands. George Russell, Lando Norris, and I'm still going to put Albon in that group, even though he's racing under a Thai license. All three of those drivers are...
And Britt Ferrari coming through.
And Britt Ferrari as well. I was going to tag you in that earlier on. But
why? What's he done? I didn't
he's going up to Formula 2 next year with Prima.
Oh, great.
Ollie Bierman, that, if you don't get the reference.
Yeah.
But George Russell, finally, a first Grand Prix victory there. A couple of seconds ahead of Hamilton at the line. Mercedes get a 1-2 out of nowhere. Sainz Leclerc third and fourth ahead of Alonso, and then Alonso beat both Red Bulls, just as you do. And then
Ocon started 17th.
Ocon, Bottas, Jamie. Where's Bottas and Alfa Romeo aren't scoring any more points this year? Thank you very much. P9, two more points on the board.
I was basing it off the 2009 scoring system.
Okay. And then Stroll in P10 there. Yeah, an interesting Grand Prix in the end. Driver of the day, Jamie.
I'll go for your favourite driver, Fernando Alonso.
Fair play, he absolutely deserves to be in that show. He didn't put a foot wrong on Sunday, balls himself up Saturday, but 17th to 5th, you can never argue, isn't a very, very good result. And I actually put him in my contention for driver of the day as well. Because you said Alonso, I am going to say George Russell.
Yeah, fair play. He was the other one that was up there.
Exactly. Hamilton as well, quality. I think, deserves a shout out. 8th to 2nd, well, 8th to 3rd and then 8th to 2nd after the contact early on. And then, yeah, you know, Sainz as well. Double podium for him.
Yeah,
very
really
good
solid
weekend. But, yeah, I think there's been a lot to discuss there, hasn't there? And we've still
got
quite a bit. F1 fantasy to go through.
Yeah.
What are we rating that Grand Prix? Now, I think really the question is, Jamie, was it better than Silverstone, or was it just right underneath it as the second best race of the year?
I'm not even sure. I don't know. Everyone was gassed up. Maybe it's... I explained it to Matt before the show. I wasn't watching live. I was at work. I forgot to turn off my notifications when the race started.
That always ruins a race. If you don't watch it
live. I saw that people... It doesn't for me if I turn off my notifs.
No, if you don't turn off notifs, that's fine. But if you know the result, it completely ruins
the match. I didn't know the result, but I knew that Verstappen and Hamilton crashed.
Right, okay.
At that point, I turned my notifications off. So, kind of took the shine off the race for me. But it was enjoyable, definitely. But it was definitely worse than Silverstone for me.
Yeah. Silverstone for me still is race of the year, but I think I'm going to give that 9 out of 10. Silverstone was a 9.5.
I'll give it 8.5.
Fair enough.
I think there was another race that I rated. I can't remember which one it was now.
It must have been so good you can't remember it.
USA, was that good? I can't remember.
No, it was painful.
USA was quite good. I can't, yeah. This year's just been a blur for me. There's been so many races.
It's been just a wild year in so many ways, hasn't it?
Yeah.
But luckily, of course, you know, we actually now get a proper 3-month winter where we can really sort of go back through and digest everything, can't we? On the show as well.
Get the race highlights playlist on.
Yes. F1 fantasy then, Jamie. How well?
And someone forgot to use their Mega Driver.
I did forget to use my Mega Driver, but to be honest, it probably wasn't a bad thing. Because, of course, Verstappen didn't have a really good weekend, and I will say now I would have given him my Mega Driver.
Yeah. Yeah. So, obviously, it's higher scoring than usual because there's more points available on a sprint race.
I really hope I outscored you.
I didn't do great. I did okay. My points for the weekend were 215.
It's happened.
What did you get?
237.
Oh, you might. Wow. That's a big gain. You might have got into the top 1K in your own league.
I hope so. I actually had, on paper, quite a quietly very good weekend in the end. So I stuck it out with Sainz as my turbo, which was, in the end, a pretty wise choice. 86 points he netted me.
Best one you could have gone for, I think.
Verstappen and Perez. It scored me 30 and 29, respectively.
Money.
Not great for the money, but let's be fair. It was always going to be a big gamble to go anywhere else. I also had Alonso, Bottas and Alpine, which after Saturday, I was... Well, after Friday night with Bottas, I was screwed. And then after Saturday, I was even more screwed. But, you know, Alonso did a fantastic race and Alpine managed to get both cars back into the points. We did completely forget to mention after the sprint race that Alonso's car caught fire. Which kind of just summed
Ocon. Ocon's car.
Yeah, sorry, who did I say?
Alonso.
Sorry, both out. Well, yeah, Ocon. His car caught fire, which kind of just summed up Alpine's year, didn't it? Going great, and then just an explosion. It would be so Alpine for McLaren next weekend to somehow bring it back from the dead.
Yeah.
And outscore him.
Ricardo wins.
Oh, don't. I'm back in the top 1,000 of our league, though, Jamie.
Oh, well done.
4,504 of us involved, and I am 988th. I'm hanging on by a thread at the moment.
You're doing great.
Where did you score in Brazil?
Overall in your league?
Overall in my league.
1,402.
I was 859th, which I will take. Shall I do a top 10 rundown of the week, or do you want to do a week and I'll do overall?
You do the week.
I'll do the week then.
Go quickly.
Far grid 3, 449 what? Points.
Is that real?
Mega Drive and Russell.
What
a baller. In Mega Drive and Russell had Sainz, Perez, Alonso and Albon with Mercedes. That is got to be the height. Check on the Global League. That has got to be the most points I've ever seen. Ever. In this. That is, fair play to Farhad there. That is mental. 449 points. He's probably brought himself right towards the top of the league if he's been here since the start.
He's actually not the highest scorer.
I mean, what was the most anyone scored in the world?
452.
So what difference was there then?
What,
I'm guessing he had someone other than Albon.
He had Bottas.
Ah, there we go then.
Yeah.
There we go. But yeah, Mevyn K, 50 points back. With Toto Wuss there, 399. Ross T, 392 ahead of Nilupa D in P4. Farhad again, just getting both teams into the top 10 quite casually. at Sabalo, F1 team number 3 with Ionis G on 375. They're ahead of Nilupa D again on 362. Vladimir M, 357 ahead of Nick S and Ionis again. So yeah, quite a few teams there actually getting two cars into the top 10. 350 points this week, Jamie, would have landed you inside the top 10, but of course that was with Mega Driver. The best person without using their Mega Driver was Edward C, Return of the Mag, got 315 points. George Russell, Lewis Hamilton, Carlos Sainz, Lando Norris, Albon and Mercedes. Fair play to you as well, good
decent.
Sir. If you turboed Russell, 445 points would have been yours. Sorry, if you Mega Drivered Russell even.
Oh, okay.
445 points would have been yours.
Yeah. So the top 10 overall, we've still got the boys who cried wolf. P1 with Bryce G, Larry T second, Bartek M third, the Volvo 247 Global 2021.
That is the one to watch out for. Still with his Mega.
Still Mega. Use it.
I hope he hasn't forgot about this.
Who's even... I wouldn't even know. Probably Verstappen.
I'd just go Verstappen.
It'd be boring. Nihal V in fifth. With Max T, who's had an absolute fall from grace in sixth place.
Oh, bless him. I do feel sorry for Max every
almost
time.
100 points off the lead.
Oh,
Mega.
I think he gave up after Hamilton Mega at Spa. And I can't blame
him. Mihir S in seventh with Cancrone Racing Point in eighth, also with a Mega driver left. And Anurag B in ninth with Kevin L in 10th place. You need 4,171 to get top 10.
How many are you on overall, Jamie?
3,801.
So you're exactly 200 ahead of me, so it's basically no chance I can outscore you by the end of the year.
Unless, well, someone scored 200 more than me this race.
Yeah, but that was also a sprint weekend.
True.
I mean, I would have been 140 back with
be
no Mega Driver if I'd Megged who I was going to. So, you know what? I'm going to go absolutely all out next weekend and go for the
just
most...
Just do something rogue.
Win
Gasly
it or
Mega.
Bin it. No, I'm not stupid. Gaz is going to get race banned by the end of next weekend, so I wouldn't worry. He's going to look at that Alpine on fire in the Brazil pit lane and go, you know what, I'm not messing around with that. Our own predictions though, Jamie, we did terribly this week because let's be fair, no one was expecting that.
Who's predicting that? Kevin Magnussen on pole, get away.
I honestly thought you would for some reason, but there we go.
I mean, to be fair, if you'd have told me, like, I'm not allowed to pick a top six driver, I could have done.
You could have. So the scores going into this weekend were 66 to 47. I was already mathematically out of it. Jamie, overall this week, scored
zero.
Did
I get one? Zero.
You
zero.
Got zero.
Nice.
And I got one. So I'm closing it back in. It's all over, though. So, yeah, 66 to 48 as we leave Brazil there. So there will be a rogue tweet on my Twitter account in the coming weeks. But I mean, this has been, I think, one of the longest shows we've done all year, and it's been action-packed, hasn't it, Jamie? So much to talk about this weekend. But who are you saying? No, we've already done driver of the day. Is there anything
else? Quiz yet.
We haven't done quiz. No, we completely forgot about that. I'm so sorry.
Where was that meant to go?
We should have done it after. Well, I'm not going to give you a hint quickly.
Oh, great.
But we should have done it, Jamie, after Friday. And I completely forgot because you did such a beautiful segue. So, Jamie.
Hello.
The quiz this week. There are currently 11 drivers in the... Well, they're not currently in Formula 1, most of them. There's 11 drivers, Jamie, that have had exactly one pole position in Formula 1 since 1990. You have got 1 minute.
You know, I was actually looking at this... I don't remember it, but I was actually looking at this list this morning.
You have got 1 minute starting now to name me those drivers.
Okay, Magnussen, Hülkenberg.
Yeah. Sorry, let me just delete them.
One pole.
Exactly one pole.
Sainz?
Nope, because...
Perez?
Yep.
Since 1990, it's going to be some strange ones, isn't it?
You'd actually be surprised. You will have heard Frentzen? Of all of these. Nope. He got more than one
Irvine?
Pole. Nope, he got more than one pole.
This is hard. This is really hard.
It's not actually.
Heidfeld, Kubica.
Yep, those are two you should be getting. Two. Yep.
Kovalainen?
Yep.
Oof. Russell?
Yep.
Oh, yeah. Hungary, of course. Who else is
good?
You
got four more to go.
I said Magnussen. One.
5 seconds.
Oh,
three,
that's not gone well.
Two,
Petrov? No,
one.
Why did Petrov get it?
When did Petrov? We would have remembered that. Especially when he kisses Eric Boulier on the podium.
You know, that wasn't even his girlfriend.
No, it
wasn't.
It was just his Asian or trainer, wasn't it? So, Jamie, you got 7 out of 11 there. Three of these you will absolutely kick yourself. Now, before we did the show, I thought Sainz only got one pole position as well, so I was worried that this list wasn't accurate. But then, of course, I remembered he's actually got three to his name.
Three?
Yep. It was a bit of a red herring, to be honest, the 1990, because there was actually only one driver prior to Nick Heidfeld's 2005 European Grand Prix pole. There was only actually one driver before that that only got one pole, and that was actually in 1990. So
great. So I wasn't going to get that one.
Thierry Boutsen, who, of course, is pretty much only remembered in Formula 1 because he hit someone and Schumacher got a drive.
No, that wasn't him.
No, that wasn't. Was it?
That wasn't him. I can't remember who it was.
Are we sure? Have I just said that and it wasn't actually him?
You've just accused Thierry Boutsen of assault.
I have just
when
accused
him
of assault and it wasn't him, was it? I don't think he did
well,
he?
I can't remember his name. Driver Punch.
Yeah, he was a completely... Oh, I'm so sorry, Thierry. That was a completely different driver. I apologise for that. We've gone down a rabbit hole, Jamie.
Yeah. Anyway, who's the next one? I'll do some research.
So, you have got three other drivers that probably all three you will kick yourself for not getting.
Okay.
First of all, you forgot the Venezuelan goat.
Oh, yeah.
Pastor Maldonado.
Yeah. Pastor Maldonado.
Second of all, you forgot the Canadian goat.
Who?
Turkey 2020.
Oh, of course. Lance.
Sir Lancelot.
Yeah.
And last but not least...
Gatto was the guy who...
Yes,
someone.
Sorry. Last but not least, of course, little Lando Norris. Last year at Russia. Everyone forgets that pole.
Yeah.
It's because he evaporated
well,
it 3 laps from the end of the Grand Prix. He would also be a race winner, but there we are. 7 out of 11, though, Jamie. Like I said, I feel like you're kicked. That was very much like a me-style quiz, where you know all of them, but just can't quite
that was
connect
a good
the dots.
Well done.
Thank you. I'm very, very proud of that one. And we've kind of shoehorned it very badly into the end of the show.
Yes, indeed. One more piece of news. Hülkenberg's coming back.
Has he been... Well, he hasn't been confirmed. I thought you'd been confirmed then. He's probably coming back. Yeah, I mean, we'll talk about that more on Friday, I think, won't we? Or Thursday, whenever the pre-Abu Dhabi show comes out, because it's meant to be confirmed on Wednesday, isn't it? I'm going to ask you one other quick question, Jamie, before we finish off, because it's just a random fact that I found out today that I love. Can you name me the only ever Formula One car that wasn't built by Ferrari or built in the UK that won a world championship?
Wow.
Only one ever in the 72 years of the sport. Hasn't... Obviously,
surely
other teams have been
Renault
registered elsewhere.
No, Enstone,
they were based in Enstone.
Wow.
But you're... If, I'll question. Give you a hint. You're on the right lines with Renault.
Who are... Benetton were British.
Benetton weren't British, but they were based in it. I always find it weird when I go to Europe and you'd remember that Benetton's actually just a clothes shop, because obviously we only remember them for being a Formula 1 team.
That's a really hard question. Is it a manufacturer?
Not anymore.
But, okay.
Do you want me to give you the year?
Or the country, would that give it away?
Well, you, like I said, you're on the right lines with Renault, so I'll tell you it was
French.
French.
Wow, which of the French teams have ever done anything?
Now, it's, again, even more tricky because, if I'm not mistaken, the team was actually registered in the UK, but unlike a lot of teams that register elsewhere in the world and build their cars in the UK, this was registered in the UK but wasn't actually built here.
Oh, great. So I've got no chance. What was the year? And I'll just try and get the champion.
1969. You should easily be able to get that champion.
Oh, is that not Jackie?
It was Sir Jackie.
I don't know what team it was. BRM?
Nope.
Matra?
Yes.
No, they never won anything. Matra won a championship.
It was. Yeah.
Wow.
It's the only ever car to win a world championship that wasn't built in the UK or in Maranello.
That's a very good
factoid for the day. I'm sure you'll use it in the quiz next year, and I'll hate myself the fact I forgot about it, but there we are. I think we've pretty much gone over everything we've ever needed to, Jamie, and a whole lot more this evening. And nearly a 90-minute podcast for you all.
Yeah,
and we'll
that's got to be getting on for a record.
It's got to be getting there, and we'll be back later on this week as well, because there's even more to discuss from the world of Formula One. But, I mean, yeah, if you've made it this far, a massive thank you to all of you for listening. Let us know your thoughts and feelings on everything from this weekend down below, and we will return for the last time in 2022. We'll be back out for the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix, the season finale. It's come round really quick, and one last preview show from Knowing Wheel.